Hey, this is Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe, and you're listening to Practical Defense.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix, and this is episode 216, The Zimmerman-Martin Incident with Marty Hayes. This week, we're going to look at the facts of the Zimmerman-Martin incident that happened back on February 26, 2012, with Marty Hayes, president of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. As longtime listeners of the show might recall, Marty and his wife Gila have both been guests in the past. And at this point, Marty might even qualify for the description of regular guest. So this week, Marty and I spend nearly 45 minutes discussing the facts of the case as they were available at the time of the recording, which was the morning of Monday, April 23rd. We do not discuss race or politics, but rather focus on the known and current evidence. Marty also explains the Florida laws in a way that everyone can understand. The discussion concludes with Marty making a few predictions about the case, and I go off on a rant about the media. You know, although this information is included in my bio, for those that do not know, I was the product manager and corporate spokesman for a Fortune 500 security software company. I spent just over 4 years traveling the world doing press tours and speaking at large venues. I was interviewed on an average about 10 times per week for print and radio shows. I was also on TV quite a bit, usually by satellite, but sometimes the stations would send crews over to our research center, or I would travel to their studio for a live show. And for some of the big names, I was on Good Morning America, Fox News, and I was on the Discovery Channel about 5 or 6 times. And all of that is to kind of give some background on my experiences and to put my opinion of the mass media into context. And think about it, I think my explanation was probably actually longer than my rant. Anyway, the good news is that all of my press experience and love of education is what led me to podcasting in this show. So a lot of good did come out of it. Okay, before we jump to the main segment, I must provide one word of caution. At one point during the discussion, Marty reads, word for word, the transcript of the 911 call from George Zimmerman. In a word of warning to our younger listeners and the parents of our younger listeners, there are a few instances of adult language when Marty reads the transcript. I thought about bleeping the words, but in the spirit of completeness, I decided to leave them in. There's been way too much spin and way too much omission regarding that call, so I really felt that everything needed to be there. And with that, we'll be right back with our discussion of the Zimmerman-Martin incident with Marty Hayes.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. And today, our special guest is Marty Hayes, president of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. And we're going to talk about the Zimmerman-Martin incident. And just to clear the air right now, we're not going to go into any sort of politics. We're just going to talk about the facts of the case, the laws in Florida, and the potential impacts they might have for the legally armed citizen. So thanks for coming on, Marty.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you invited me, and I'm very glad to be able to talk about this. It's been frustrating sitting here back watching it on Fox News and sometimes on CNN and not being able to voice a cogent, logical discussion or opinion about what's going on.
Oh, I know. I mean, we're not talking about politics, but we're going to talk about the media. Both sides are just spinning this, and it's just out of control, and it's distorting the facts of the case, which hopefully will come out during the trial.
Yeah, and in fact, what I want to do is to help your listeners understand what the facts of the law and how the facts of this case that we know are uncontroverted apply to the law, and maybe people get an idea where this is headed.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's start there. Let's start by talking about the Stand Your Ground law in Florida.
Okay. From how I understand the Florida Stand Your Ground law, is that it was a statutory law enacted in 2005 by the state legislature and signed into law by, I believe, then Governor Jeb Bush. What the legislature did was they made a law which basically gave the armed citizen some extra rights. The concept of stand your ground actually has been a long-running concept in common law. And that was in place before Florida enacted this law. And let me explain how that works a little bit. The court system will make rulings, and a stand your ground law is simply a statutory restatement of court rulings. In other words, the courts say that, listen, you don't have to retreat to the farthest place in complete safety in order to mount a legitimate lawful self-defense. If you have a right to be where you're at, you're not doing anything illegal, and you have to basically use force to defend yourself, then your right to do so. You don't have to retreat. You can stand your ground. Well, in this particular law, they statutorily codified the previous Florida court rulings. But in addition to that, they also extended the law, which meant that an armed citizen who was in a lawful place to be, who used self-defense, if there is a preponderance of the evidence, and that means more than 50%, in other words, 51% or more of the evidence shows that it was a legitimate case of self-defense, then that armed citizen cannot even be prosecuted or sued for that act of self-defense.
So how does that affect Zimmerman in this particular instance?
Well, let's just kind of look at general, not just the Zimmerman case for the moment. And so if a person uses force in self-defense, whether that's you're simply punching somebody in the nose or that's shooting and killing them, then the state looks at the case, and under or before this law, the mere act of punching someone in the nose or shooting them is a crime. Then the defendant, the person who was arrested for the crime of assault, the punch in the nose, or murder, shooting and killing somebody, they have to claim self-defense at trial and then show that it was indeed self-defense. What this law does is it takes away that ability for the prosecutor to make the arrest for the punch in the nose or the shooting if there's a preponderance of the evidence that it was a justified punch in the nose or a justified shooting. And how this occurs is that before a trial happens, there is a pretrial hearing if the defense wants to put a motion forth to have this hearing. So the defense, and in this case it would be George Zimmerman through his attorney Mark O'Mara, they would petition the court and they would lay all of their evidence out on the table for the judge to see, and the prosecution would lay out all of its evidence in front of the judge, and the judge will, you know, do the scales of justice balance thing, and he will decide whether or not the scales tip towards George Zimmerman and his lawful or his claim of lawful self-defense, or they will tip towards the prosecution and their claim that Zimmerman committed a crime. If the scales tip towards Zimmerman, then Zimmerman is free to go and he cannot be prosecuted.
Okay. And originally Zimmerman was not even arrested for these cases, for this
instance.
Well,
and I believe this is what was going on, was that the prosecutor, the original prosecuting attorney in the area, looked at the evidence, looked at the whole case and says, hey, man, you know, there's not enough evidence to go forward. There's more evidence to believe that Mr. Zimmerman was lawful in his defense, as there's evidence to believe that Mr. Zimmerman was criminally culpable.
Now, in previous discussions that we've had on the show, you mentioned that it is very, very important to avoid the initial arrest at the time and how important it was for the first responding officer's report and how heavy that weighted. That night, Zimmerman was allowed to go home, which was a very, very good sign for him.
Right. And that's because the police officers, after investigating the scene, discussing with him for, I believe, 5 hours, or at least he was incarcerated for 5 hours and was had the case reviewed by the police and probably a member of the prosecutor's office. They looked at all the evidence and they said, you know, this is likely a legitimate case of self-defense. So under the statutory Florida Stand Your Ground law, they were prohibited from making that arrest and moving forward towards the prosecution.
So we're already heading kind of in that direction. So let's go ahead and start applying the facts of the case. And one of the issues that gets continually brought up is that Zimmerman is being called a watchman or a watch captain. And the terms have been tossed around and there have been various ways that the media has described it. But as we were discussing off the show, it's not quite the same as being a private security officer.
No, in fact, what my understanding is that the homeowners association that he belonged to probably contacted their local sheriff's department or police department and asked to form a quasi-official neighborhood watch or block watch association within that homeowners association. And if a viewer wants to do some more research on this, just Google neighborhood watch or block watch, and it'll tell you exactly what we're talking about here. Typically, because of a high crime or incidences of high crime, the people decide to band together and say, listen, we're going to help the police watch our neighborhood. And so that's what was going on. And over the course of several months, apparently Zimmerman had taken his role as the captain of this block watch seriously, and he did some nightly patrols or quasi-nightly patrols or whatever. And if he saw suspicious activity, he then reported to the police and went from there.
And so that's what, in this case, led him to the interaction with Martin.
Right.
He was out on patrol that evening and saw something that he's suspicious and he called it in.
Right. And in fact, I've got the dispatch records in front of me here, which is, it's important that people understand exactly what was said. And so with your indulgence, I want to just make sure that we understand exactly what Zimmerman told the dispatcher.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thing Zimmerman said is, hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy near Retreat View Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retreat View Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining. He's just walking around looking about. Now, in other words, he saw some suspicious activity, and because it was raining, Zimmerman said, this doesn't look weird. He's not walking home. He's just kind of wandering around in the rain. And so that's what drew his interest towards Martin. Okay. After that, the dispatcher asks, okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic? Zimmerman, as we all know, says he looks black. Dispatcher then asks, well, what is he wearing? And understand something. The dispatcher is also typing this information into their computer terminal, which is being sent out in real time to the local police patrols. And so they're seeing what the dispatcher is typing. Dispatcher's probably already typed Retreat View Circle, suspicious person, black. And then Zimmerman says, yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's unintelligible. He was just staring. And so then the dispatcher says, okay, just walking around the area. And Zimmerman says, looking at all the houses. And so I don't know where you fit into the world, Alex, but if this was me and I was Zimmerman and I was seeing this occurring in my neighborhood, which had a proliferation of burglaries, break-ins, et cetera, then I would be suspicious of this guy, regardless of what his race was or anything else.
That absolutely sounds like suspicious activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so then the dispatcher goes on and asks, okay, that's the clubhouse. Do you know what he's near the clubhouse right now? Zimmerman says, yeah, now he's coming towards me. Dispatcher says, okay. Zimmerman says he's got his hand in his waistband, and he's a black male. dispatcher says, how old would you say he looks? Zimmerman says he's got button on his shirt, late teens. Late teens, okay. And so that's what Zimmerman had said the night, and he basically identified him as someone in his late teens. Zimmerman then goes on and says, something's wrong with him. Yep, he's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is. Dispatcher says, just let me know if he does anything, okay? Zimmerman then says, how long until you get an officer over here? So Zimmerman is getting a little bit concerned about Martin coming towards him, apparently. Then Zimmerman says, okay, these assholes, they always get away. When you come to this clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would just go past the clubhouse. Dispatcher asks, is it on the left-hand side of the clubhouse? Zimmerman says, no, you go straight in through the entrance, and then you make a left. You go straight in, don't turn, make a left. Shit, he's running. And that's what Zimmerman said. And so now Martin is running away from Zimmerman. Apparently Martin decided not to confront Zimmerman, probably saw that he was on the cell phone talking to dispatch, and so Martin takes off and starts running the other way. Dispatcher says he's running. Which way is he running? Zimmerman says, down towards the other entrance to the neighborhood. Dispatcher says, what entrance is that where he's heading towards? Zimmerman says, the back entrance, fucking, and then unintelligible again. Okay, dispatcher says, are you following him? Zimmerman says, yeah. Dispatcher then says, okay, we don't need you to do that. Zimmerman then agrees and says, okay. Now, that whole conversation that I just read to you has been interpreted by the media to mean that Zimmerman was chasing him down, chasing Martin down. And I don't read that at all, having been a police officer and even once a police dispatcher. What I read this is as a two-way communication between Martin, between Zimmerman and the dispatch center, and that they are in agreement or in acting in concert to keep an eye on Martin until the police officers show up.
I mean, according to the media, the media said the dispatcher said, don't follow him.
Right, but that's not what the dispatcher said. The dispatcher said, okay, we don't need you to do that. And Zimmerman says, okay. And I believe that Zimmerman probably quit following Martin at that time, saying, okay, and he's probably thinking in the back of his mind, good, I don't have to be running after this guy. The police are probably going to be showing up anytime and we'll catch him.
So if that's the case, how did they meet up later?
Don't know. That's one of the items that is basically being disputed as far as, you know, what happened after this call. Let's just finish the call. It doesn't take too much longer here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and so the dispatcher then asks about who he is. Zimmerman identifies himself as George Zimmerman, gives the phone number. And then Zimmerman basically is telling the police where to meet him. Okay, and so it's clear to me that Zimmerman is no longer chasing Martin. He's in fact waiting for the police to show up, and he gives a description of where he's at. Okay, and so then the last thing that we hear from the dispatch is, okay, no problem. I'll let them know to call you when you're in the area. In other words, Zimmerman gave the dispatcher his cell phone number, and the police are going to call him when he gets in the area. And that is the end of the 911 tape.
Okay.
And so we don't know for a fact what happened after that. The accounts that Zimmerman's family has said, and I'm not sure I would have been having my parents make statements about what I told them, because that can be actually used against Zimmerman in a court of law by the exception to the hearsay rule as far as a statement against interest. But anyway, the parents said that he was basically back at his car or walking back to his car, at which point Zimmerman came up and punched him in the nose. I'm sorry, at which time Martin came up and punched him in the nose. Broke his nose, fell down on the ground, and jumped up on top of him and was beating him, hitting him, and at some point was basically his head was contacting the cement, whether on purpose by Martin or as a result of the punches. I don't know about that yet.
Were there other calls made to 911? I remember reading about other, not eyewitness accounts, because no one actually saw it, but they did hear scuffling and a conflict going on.
Yeah, there. After this apparently is going on, and there's this argument and this fist fight, between Zimmerman and Martin. Apparently one of the other individuals in the area looked out, was on cell phone or was on the phone with dispatch and said that there's a fight going on out here or something like that. And then there is some screaming that is heard over this other cell phone, this witness, and then the shot is fired. And apparently the witness had gone back in the house, didn't see exactly what happened immediately before the shot was fired, but a few seconds before the shot was fired, the witness is discussing the fact that he saw Martin on top of Zimmerman beating him.
Okay.
So that's basically the facts as I understand them to be, with a few additional now that is coming out. First off, the media, of course, made it look like Zimmerman chased him down and shot an unarmed individual who was just trying to escape. Well, I don't read that in the dispatch logs, and Zimmerman's folks didn't make that claim, didn't state that, and I think that Zimmerman will be able to make a pretty cogent argument. In fact, I'm sure he told the police what was happening and that he was not chasing him down at the time of the shooting, but instead was near or at his vehicle waiting for the police to show up.
Okay. So now that we have the facts that are available to us right now, let's move on to the how he handled the aftermath. Because, of course, you know, we always know that no conflict ends at the end of the conflict. It continues on into the legal realm afterwards. So let's diagnose and break down the good and the bad and the ugly when it comes to how Zimmerman handled this.
Okay, well, first of all, I think we need to put ourselves in the place of George Zimmerman, whose father was apparently a retired judge and whose mother still works in the court system. And so I believe that Mr. Zimmerman had a high respect for the law, high respect for law enforcement and the court system. And so I believe that he was in the mindset of being a cooperative witness and really wasn't in the mindset that he's going to be a criminal suspect. And so that's what his mindset was. And so he handled the discussion, the aftermath with the police based on that mindset. And while that's all good, I think that the well-educated armed citizen needs to know that you're always going to be a criminal suspect too. And so while you need to actually cooperate with the police up to a certain point, you also need to protect your rights. And I don't think that Zimmerman did that very effectively. But having said that, I don't think that what he did really hurt him either.
Really? Because I saw some things that really made me question what was happening. And one of them, of course, was, you know, talking directly to the prosecution without legal counsel. And then, of course, during his bail hearing, allowing him to speak there directly to the family and the couple of statements that he made there. I was pretty shocked by that. But, you know, in retrospect, based on the actual transcript that you read from the 911 call, it may or may not hurt him.
Right. And the fact that he wasn't arrested after the incident, but instead let go, tells me that he basically told the same story probably a half a dozen different times, wasn't contradictory, except for perhaps just a few very minor points. And so his statements to the police afterwards basically coincided with everything they knew about the case. And so they let him go that night. And for like 47 days or something, he wasn't arrested or prosecuted. As we discussed, though, on previous shows, Alex, we might not want to go that far in our self-defense incident. I firmly believe that we need to make sure the police understand who is the initial aggressor, who the criminal suspect was, what that person was doing that caused you to fear for your life and that made you shoot them. In this case, the woman probably says, well, here I was out here doing my neighborhood watch captain thing, and I was on the police talking with on dispatch talking to them, and then I lost sight of him, so I was waiting around the car waiting for police to show up, at which time Martin then confronted me, punched me in the nose. Apparently his nose was broken, at least that the counselor said, and then jumped up on top of me, was beating me, smashing my head into the concrete, and I felt I had no recourse except to shoot to get him off of me.
Okay.
That took all of about, oh, maybe 60 seconds for me to tell what happened, putting my place in the place of Zimmerman. And at that point, I would say, officers, this is an extremely serious situation. I'm willing to cooperate 100%, but I really would like to have counsel here before we discuss the case further. And that's what I would like to see any members of the Armed Citizens Network do and how to handle that.
Now, do you think he had counsel when during that five-hour interrogation that he went through?
There's nothing that shows that he does. And I think he was in the mindset that, boy, I want to help the police as much as I can here. And so he was telling them everything that he knew about the incident.
Which is good, but quite risky to go through that interrogation process without counsel present.
Well, the biggest risk is if the police don't write it down or they misinterpret the words and then they put it in the reports wrong. They put it in the affidavits, probable cause statement wrong, and then they end up being arrested basically based on police error, whether on purpose or just simply through sloppy police work. I am pretty positive that this is all recorded, though, and so I don't think that his words are going to come back and haunt him too much.
So what I'm hearing is based on the facts as we know them, you still don't think they're going to have much of a case.
I do not. They certainly have the elements of murder fulfilled, the intentional killing of a human being. But because of the Florida law, where Zimmerman is claiming self-defense and the evidence that is being seen, especially the recent bloody photograph, or the photograph of the blood on the back of his head, it really helps Zimmerman show that he acted in lawful self-defense.
Then why is the prosecutor going for, it's not even going for manslaughter. The charge is second-degree murder.
You'll have to ask the prosecutor that. and we don't want to go into politics and race issues. And frankly, I think that this is just an example of how political pressure can be used against you or against the armed citizen to result in you being arrested and prosecuted. Before all this political pressure started coming down, he was a free man. And it was only after everybody started, beating the drums for an arrest and a prosecution that he ended up being prosecuted. I find it noteworthy that the police chief basically resigned over this. And my reading of that is that he basically took a stand and says, no, I'm not prosecuting him. But because of political pressure, he was probably told, yes, we are. And he said, well, I'm not working for you people anymore. I'm out of here. The original prosecutor on the case was taken off the case and replaced by a new prosecutor. And so it would be fascinating to actually know what happened behind the scenes there. We can just surmise, and that's my opinion as far as really what happened here.
Now, in one article that I saw in USA Today, they actually mentioned an affirmative defense for Zimmerman. And I was like, oh, I wonder if the network's involved in this. Are any of our members involved?
No, we have no involvement whatsoever. Although if we got a phone call tomorrow, we would listen to him and see if there's anything that we could do to help. Interestingly, we've had a lot of our members want us to get involved, either on the legal side or from a financial voluntary standpoint. But we have refused because this is not our fight. George Zimmerman wasn't a member of the network, and so we limit our resources for our members.
Okay. So at the time of the recording, which is Monday, April 23rd, Zimmerman was released on bail this morning. How did that process happen?
Okay, so the judge in the case, which was a replacement judge, because the first judge recused herself because, as I understand it, she's married to an attorney who was initially consulted on this case, and that attorney is also a paid consultant for CNN. And so she felt that, I really probably better not be involved in this. And so she recused herself, and a new judge was appointed. And now this judge basically heard a hearing, a motion for bail, and the judge had the right to deny bail because it was a murder. But you can only deny bail if you think that either there's a huge flight risk, the person is going to flee, or that there is so much evidence in the situation to believe that he is a menace to society. Apparently, this judge decided neither one of those were in place, and so he denied the request from the prosecution for no bail or to make the bail $1 million, and instead said that the bail is $150,000. Now, that means that Zimmerman either had to come up with $150,000 and put it on the table, saying, I'll be back to face the charges, and this is my guarantee that I'll be back, or he paid someone $15,000, which he will never get back, which was the cost of a bail bondsman telling the judge that I will ensure that Mr. Zimmerman shows up for trial, and if he doesn't, I will pay you $150,000. So that's how bail works.
And that's how bail bondsmen and bounty hunters come into play. Like the famous one from Hawaii is, Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Right.
So if the person skips out on the bail and decides they're not going to show up to trial, the bail bondsman hires bounty hunters to go and retrieve them and pull them back so they don't lose that $150,000 to the court.
Exactly. Now, an interesting situation here that kind of hits home to me is that one of our first cases that we worked on from the network, we didn't work officially for a network member, but for a close associate, this gentleman had shot and wounded two people, and he was being prosecuted for two counts of aggravated assault, actually three counts, but this third count was later dropped. The judge in that case didn't even allow this gentleman to post a bail. He had to come up with the whole $100,000 cash. He couldn't put up his house. He couldn't hire a bail bondsman. He had to get all his friends and neighbors and relatives to get together, and they had to scrape up $100,000 and put that on the table. So there is that part of it. I don't know why that was such a situation for this gentleman, but that's what they chose to do. And this was down in Arizona, which is otherwise a pretty good state for gun rights. Anyway, so this was what allowed Mr. Zimmerman to be released this morning, was the fact that he or his family scraped together $15,000, paid it to a bail bondsman, and that let him walk out of jail this morning with some restrictions. He has to be wearing a monitoring device, which is basically a GPS that can't be cut off. It's permanently attached to him until the police decide to take it off, so they can always keep track of his whereabouts. And if it is disabled somehow, then the police will go try to find him and put him back in jail.
Now, also interestingly, I read that they may allow him to go out of state because of the threats to his life, which is an unusual move, because normally they say, don't go anywhere, stay in town. But right. In this case, they may actually let him go out of state.
Well, and I think that's a logical situation because there are obvious death threats against Mr. Zimmerman. They had him bundled up in a bulletproof vest when they took him from the jail to the awaiting car. And so they're concerned about his safety, and his family is. And so I hope that he does get to a safe location, which is not found out by anybody, to assist in his defense and until he gets to the next aspect of the legal proceedings.
So what are the next aspects of the legal proceedings? He's out on bail now. And so some time has passed. The prosecution's had a chance to build their case. The defense has had a chance to research and build their case. And then what happens?
Well, in this particular situation in Florida, Zimmerman has the right to request a hearing to establish the fact that he acted in reasonable self-defense, that he wasn't he didn't go overboard, his use of force was not unreasonable, and he has to basically go forward and put on enough evidence so the judge believes that there's more evidence of legitimate self-defense than there is evidence of criminal act. And according to Florida law and according to case law, Zimmerman will be set free if he can do that. And to me, that's where this trial is all about, is that preliminary hearing.
So is this what they call a grand jury?
No. A grand jury is basically a mechanism where the state thinks that somebody might have committed a crime, and so they put the evidence in front of a panel of citizens in the area, and those citizens decide whether or not a crime was committed, and if the person should be arrested and prosecuted. And they could have called a grand jury. In fact, they had one scheduled for earlier this month, but the prosecutor, for whatever reason, decided to go out on her own and make the claim that probable cause existed to arrest, and so they did. This situation is coming up now. Basically, I think that the whole case is going to be resolved right here at the preliminary hearing, the stand your ground hearing, if you want to use those that terminology, and that after the judge views all of the facts on both sides, that he will make the determination whether or not Zimmerman has the right to claim self-defense, or I shouldn't say that, where he has a preponderance of the evidence of his claim of self-defense. And if he does that, then Zimmerman is released, and that's when all of the civil unrest starts.
Okay, so you went there. Oh, yeah, because, you know, I lived in L.A., you know, my entire life. I was here for the Rodney King riots, and this has all the earmarks of the same setup for it.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an influence do you think that's going to be?
I think it was an influence in his being prosecuted to begin with. I remember state of Florida also has a long memory, and that was the 1980s. A police officer, Luis Alvarez, shot and killed an individual. And right after that shooting, there were riots in the streets. And then after Mr. Alvarez was acquitted, there were more riots in the streets. And so Florida has a long history of rioting. And I think that this whole prosecution was primarily, or this whole prosecution is, an attempt to allow the whole situation to moderate and get all of the evidence in front of the people ahead of time. And they're going to draw it out as long as possible. And then they're going to show all the evidence. And finally, if the judge decides to dismiss the case, a lot of the heat will basically have gone out of the fire.
Okay.
And from a public policy standpoint, it might not be a bad approach to this whole thing.
That was going to be my follow-up question here. You know, because I also remember in the Rodney King riots that there were sympathetic riots on other cities across the country, which, you know, could happen here as well. Although the case is in Florida, there could be sympathetic riots in other major cities around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But the follow-up question I had was, you know, how long do you think they're going to draw this out? How long do you think it's going to be before the judge makes his decision or her decision? I don't know if it's a male or female.
I suspect it's a male judge, and I think it's going to be a few months anyway. And during these few months, there's going to be discovery issues. The police are going to have to show the defense exactly what they have. The defense is going to, you know, likely explain to the police what they have, any witnesses. And so this is going to go back and forth, until finally we're going to have the hearing. And hopefully, in the meantime, a lot of the heat and the rhetoric will have died down. And then, frankly, I think that some of the evidence is going to be parsed out to take the sting out of this whole thing. And people are going to start thinking, you know, maybe Mr. Martin, Trayvon Martin, was wrong. Maybe he was the instigator here. And I can't get my vision of Zimmerman's bloody head out of my mind. And so we might have a better time to riot than this particular case.
Well, we can only hope. Riots don't do anybody any good.
No, and again, Florida has a history of them, and so we'll see how that plays out. In the meantime, though, this is very instructive for the armed citizen to see what their act of self-defense can turn into at any given time. And it's really kind of amazing. This is the Rodney King incident for armed citizens, whereas the Rodney King incident was for police, and it resulted in a lot of different policies and procedures implemented for police officers all around the country. This is our Rodney King moment, and we need to be paying attention to how to handle these situations.
Yeah, the armed citizen carries a heavy, heavy weight, and it's more than the few ounces in your pocket.
Exactly. And most armed citizens don't have the ability to put up that legal fight the way the police do if they're being accused of criminal acts. It appears from what I can see that Zimmerman has some means, or his family does, and that they're helping to bankroll his defense. And so It's great that he's got some competent legal counsel. I can't imagine what would happen if he was indigent and had to rely upon public defender or assigned counsel.
Yeah, which is a great plug for the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network.
You think?
And I'm a member. I highly recommend joining. It is a fantastic organization that really helps protect your rights.
Well, again, over the years, I've seen these things occur in many, many, many cases, and this is why I decided to start this organization. Is so, for example, if Mr. Zimmerman had been a member of the network, he would have had immediate representation. As soon as we found out about it, we would have been getting him private counsel, and maybe some of the things that occurred afterwards may not have occurred. If any event, we would have had he would have had counsel throughout this whole process. And speaking of his counsel now, he looks pretty competent to me. I think Zimmerman's in pretty good hands with this fellow named Mark O'Mara.
That's good to know. I mean, because right or wrong, everyone deserves a good, solid legal defense. That is the essence of our judicial system.
Right. Okay, one thing that we haven't talked about yet, Alex, is the civil end of this and whether or not he's going to be sued or even the homeowners association is going to be sued. It's my understanding of the Florida statute that if Zimmerman can show that there was a preponderance of evidence that he acted in legitimate self-defense, then that precludes a prosecution or a civil suit. And so this may actually absolve him of civil liability. But I don't know what the relationship was with him and the homeowners association, which he was apparently working for at the time. And even if he was an unpaid volunteer, he's still under their umbrella. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out, because I would expect that the homeowners association will end up being sued.
Okay, so even though if Zimmerman is protected and shielded by the acquittal or the dismissal of the charges under the Stand Your Ground law, the homeowners association could still be liable. In this case, it would be vicarious liability.
Or direct liability, if depending on the nature of that interaction. We don't know what that nature is, so we don't know if there was schedules, made up, and it was really quite a kind of a quasi-security force that they had going, or whether there was a very loose organization with no real real scheduling of people to watch out for the neighborhood. And we don't know what that is. We also don't know whether this homeowner association, how they are formed legally, whether they're an incorporation or what exactly they are. And then we don't know if they have errors and omissions insurance, in other words, helping them in the case that they do get sued. I suspect that they do. And that's why I'm saying that the homeowners association will probably be sued, because if they have an insurance policy that someone can tap into, then they become the deep pockets.
Okay.
It's all a very fascinating case. I'm glad I'm on the opposite side of the country. And we're going to just keep watching it and see where it progresses. The listeners, though, should really they should keep an eye on this thing and see what lessons there are to be learned from it.
Well, what is the best place to actually get the information without the media spin?
I don't think there is a best way.
Okay.
I get my information basically on Fox News, which is the best of the poor media, and so then I filter that through my own knowledge of the law and. And I've been just as angry at Bill O'Reilly and Geraldo as I have at Nancy Grace over the last month, but that's okay.
So you're just angry at all of them.
Yeah.
They're all media.
None of them are reporting it correctly, but at least Fox News tries to be fair and balanced.
Yeah. With my experience in public relations, I was a corporate spokesman for a number of years for a large technical company, and I got PR training for days every 3-4 months before I went out on press tour. And one of the things that was drilled into my head is with the media, if it bleeds, it leads.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not your friends, and they will spin it, whatever you say, to make the most dramatic story to sell their content, to sell papers and to put listeners and viewers on the air.
Yeah. And there's one individual I was watching the news with says, listen, we think that the commercials are the is the media product, but in fact, you're the product. You're what is being sold to the advertisers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as the computer virus expert for a Fortune 500 company, I had media that would try and feed me lines that were just ridiculous. I had one radio reporter trying to get me to say that all virus writers need to be, quote unquote, culled from the herd. I mean, he kept feeding me that. He fed that line to me like 6 times, and I just ignored it. And of course, it was a recording. It wasn't live, so he could have edited any way he wanted. So but I could see that my PR handler, who was standing behind him, her face just blanched and her eyes got wide and was like, "Nah, I understand what he's doing. Don't, you know." I gave her the knowing look saying, "I've got it covered." But yeah, it was, oh yeah, that's the stuff they tried to get me. They wanted nothing more than for me to say that the next computer virus outbreak was going to be the end of the world. They would have loved to have had me say that. And so I spent half my time and half the interviews calming the media down and just being level-headed and very pragmatic. And they were, and their job was to try and get me to be as crazy as possible.
Sure.
So
it's like their job seems to be to try to whip up hysteria of whatever guests are on talking about the George Zimmerman case.
Yeah. So the more extremists they can have, the stronger the rhetoric, the better it is for their ratings. And that's what they're going for. You know, facts be damned. They want ratings.
Yep.
So take everything. I mean, I sound very jaded here, but I am. I take everything with the media that the media says with a grain of salt. They just, yep. The truth is in there, but it's not the main story.
You're going off on a tangent, Alex.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
I think we're getting far afield from the Zimmerman case here.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, you know, we would love to have you back when there's more information on the case, if something breaks on it, and then also again after the close when everything's said and done to do a post-analysis.
Yeah, let's get together when we know more about the facts, and they'll keep coming out. And let's try to get together right before the hearing happens, or if nothing else, after the hearing. And so we'll talk about it again.
Okay, great. Well, we will definitely set that up. But, you know, thanks again for coming on today. I think it was very enlightening, and we definitely look forward to, we're going to be following this case closely.
Yep, as are we.
All right, Marty. Well, thanks again.
You're very welcome, and good luck to all of your listeners.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. And thanks again to Marty for coming on the show. Now, Marty will definitely be back as more facts of this case come to light. Everyone can find the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network at armedcitizensnetwork.org. If you want a firearm for protection, you really need to be a member, and the case we just discussed is a perfect example of why. But that will do it for this week. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It's currently available in DeadTree, Kindle, Nook, and iTunes editions. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@palladium-education.com. You can also leave us a voicemail on the Practical Defense tip or comment line at 805-203-6586. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Hey everybody, we are
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly, and the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared too. Prepared for disaster. This
world. Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan, and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast.
For questions, tips, comments, or topic suggestions, send us an email at podcast@palladium-education.com. That's podcast@palladium-education.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 805-203-6586. I look forward to hearing from you. Practical Defense Podcast and theme music are copyright Palladium Education Incorporated.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.